good to me. Live from the Twin Cities, we are the Daves. You know, this is the Daves.
You want me to be that type of dude, and I want to be who you like me to. But we both know I can't do nothing at all.
To episode 313 of The Daves I Know. We are back after a fantastic Minnesota United victory. We have the OG, at least OG the last couple of years, crew with us, Jess and MJ. MJ, how are you doing, bud?
I am low on sleep, but high on energy.
That's good. That's very good. Jess, how about you? How are you doing?
I'm really good. I'm really, really good. And I'm excellent. Happy. And I know it. And I'm clapping my hands. clap your hands.
Excellent. Excellent. So very cool. Well, let's jump in. We have a lot to talk about for this, for a 2-1 game, a surprising amount of stuff to talk about here. As we mentioned, Loons 2, Sporks 1, this past Saturday at Allianz Field. A couple of notes for the game. Obviously, Clint Irwin was not in the 18. The team had to sign MLS Next Pro keeper Alex Smear to a short-term contract as the backup goalkeeper for the match. According to Ramsey, Clint Irwin picked up a knock, pulled his groin or something on Friday. So he said mostly a precautionary thing, but they needed a backup keeper. Unfortunately, they have to use up one of Alex's, two opportunities to play with to be on the roster for MLS. And then the other major thing, not including some other players that were injured or not able to make it, was the addition or the introduction officially of the 5-3-2 starting formation with both Tani and Pukki up top. So MJ, what were your thoughts on those pregame announcements? I know we had a couple other Thongbin, Tani as well. We talk a little bit about those guys quick, and then your general thoughts about seeing that sort of that 5-3-2 formation.
Greeter got the goods on the 5-3-2 in the sense that on Tuesday, someone directly asked about playing them both at up top.
We talked about it on the podcast the last couple of weeks.
Yeah. No, we talked about it too.
Yeah.
First inside scoop.
Eric Ramsey had said that something like, we just need to work on how it's going to look behind all of them. And so this was how he wanted them to look behind all of them. And I think what influences this is, coming off a 4-5-1 where they played five backs in Charlotte that worked, and just adjusting that for Hassani being out basically, and putting Fragapane in next to Trapp and Lude in the midfield.
Yeah. We should say, Hassani was out with a hamstring. Did they give you any indication on his timeline? Is he possibly back this weekend, or
they thought it was so minor that he could possibly be there at least off the bench this week?
Okay.
Weekend.
Okay. So I don't think
it's major.
Okay. And then
weeks, not months.
Yeah. Okay. And then Songbin obviously had just come back from Qatar. We'll talk a little bit about his journey in Qatar, but he was basically unavailable. Probably 24 hours of traveling and all that. So it was interesting. I mean, we finally got to see it. We got to see it from the get-go, and we got to see it sort of with some intention, as opposed to when Heath would throw out the 5-3-2 down in Kansas City with Thomas Chacon out there and to get them, curb stomped by Peter Vermees in Sporting Kansas City. So, Jess, what were your thoughts on sort of that, the beginning of the match, or, the sort of the formation or any of that sort of stuff?
I said Peter Vermees isn't used to being bad, but to my friend that came to the match with me, I was explaining, trying to explain a little bit of background about Sporting KC's relationship to Minnesota United. And that's what I came up with.
No, that's about right. They don't lose to Minnesota, especially Minnesota. So
I love the instant gratification of that goal right off the motherfucking bat.
Yeah.
Because I had left the Houston game or whatever the last home match was, where that was very fucking frustrating, very fucking frustrated. So I was like, this could be a long drawn out thing to the friend, and boom, goal.
Yeah.
I was like, okay, well, it's not usually like that, but that's fun.
No, that's a good transition. So Michael Boxall gets that goal. God, that's gotta only be his second or third goal for the Loons, MJ. Do you know off the top of your head, or
I do not know off the top of my head.
Anyway, so yeah, if you want to look that up.
Give me 2 minutes, I can look it up here.
I can vamp. So Boxy scores off the corner. So it was a corner from Joseph Rosales that Robin Lude flicks on from the near post, probably near the top of the six from the near post. He flicks it on to the back post, and both Pukki and Michael Boxall are both there. Pukki kind of I watched the replay a couple times. His body was awkwardly shaped or whatever, in terms of like he couldn't quite jump. And then Boxy just was right there. The Sporting Kansas City defender, not for the only time in the game, kind of let off, and Boxy was able to put his size 12 boot through the ball and put it into the back of the net right in front of the Wonderwall. It was a super fast goal. MJ, I think, has noted in here the second fastest goal in club history, which is awesome. It was in the second minute, but like 1:15 or 1:16 or something like that. Absolutely beautiful 105. Goal. 105.
By Minnesota United PR.
Perfect. 105. So great goal. Great start. Like I said, Rosales had a really great corner. I watched the press conference, and basically, I think it was Greeter who basically asked about, set pieces and if they're practicing those things in training. One thing we know about Ramsey is that he was kind of the set piece coordinator coach for Manchester United. So this is something that he knows about. He even alluded to the fact that the team is not super tall. They don't have a ton of height, a height advantage on most teams. So they need to do things that create confusion and create these opportunities for defenders to slouch off their marks and to create variables in terms of it's not like putting the ball into the box and having Erling Haaland just put his head on the ball, right? You need to create opportunities, and that comes with having a really great corner taker and then some good execution as well. So MJ, what were your that you should also point out, Michael Boxall with a terrible, terrible slide on his knees in front of the Wonderwall, which is weird because everybody else was slipping all over the goddamn place all night. So,
a couple things about that. In the post game, Boxall made a joke about that his knees must have more traction than some of the boots on some of the players.
Bonky in particular, man. That dude needs to figure out his cleat situation at Allianz. So.
I haven't had a lot of interactions with Boxy. He likes to use humor a lot. He's a funny dude. He made a really funny sarcasm thing when someone's asked him, explain what happened on the goal, and he says, "Well, I heard Robin Lude call my name because he must have seen me," or read my article. It has the exact quote, but he pretends like it's all this big calculation, and he's like, and then when he says, "Nah, this is how it went." And when he explains how this is how it went, it was more just like based on everything he's seen before. If someone gets their head on it near post, it's probably coming far post, and he's going to make that run. And he humble bragged about his shoe size and stuff like that. Again, read my article for the full quote. It's hilarious.
So, yeah. So, Jess,
seventh
goal. Okay.
More than I thought. If you had asked me before this, I would have put the over-under at 2.5. Maybe 3-4 max. But, yeah.
No, I knew it was significant. I was thinking over 5 for sure.
Okay. He's with the receipts.
he's had at least two against San Jose where he went gallivanting forward and scored a couple of goals. So I knew it was at least three, but if you told me seven, I would have not believed you at the time. So, Jess, you mentioned, you know, you brought it up originally and you know, to your friend or whatever, what was the reaction over on the west side of the field?
God, I was so busy celebrating, I didn't even watch. But I just remember watching Peter get progressively further and further out of his box. And like he seemed to age through the game, really. Like, I don't know if it was, no, it couldn't have been the weather because it was actually quite pleasant. But he cowered more and more, his hunch over as the game went on. And that's what I said. Yeah, Peter Vermes isn't used to being bad.
Absolutely. Well, we'll talk briefly about Peter Vermes here in a second, because it went bad from bad to worse for him and Sporting Kansas City with Tani Oluwaseyi scoring his fourth goal of the season to lead the team, his second in two games, two goals starting. He gets the goal in the 25th minute. This is a really great example of how that those two attackers, two forwards can work, right? Where you have, they're taking up the central defenders. There's a great ball in. Rosales takes it, you know, almost to the end line. He doesn't see any clear passes coming in, so he resets the ball back to Will Trapp, who then, you know, passes to Lude, and then Rosales, seeing that, makes a really great run. Lude hits a really perfect ball to him, and it's weird because it's a ball that's kind of, it's meant to go to Rosales. Pukki was right there, and I think the thing about this goal, and I think Tani mentioned this in his post game, is that Pukki would have been offside if he had taken the ball. But because of the run that Rosales was making, Rosales was onside. That created confusion with the defenders. So the defenders, I think, thought Pukki was going to take good to go for the ball, and he was going to be offside. So they kind of, I think, they sort of let up a little bit. Rosales was able to make that onside run. He gets the ball. He has a perfect cross past the outstretched arm of Tim Melia, and then Tani has. It's harder to miss that one. And we've seen players miss that one, but it's harder to miss that one. Then put it in the back of the net.
Said that.
Yeah, exactly.
He said it'd be harder for me to miss that one from that spot.
I've seen players, Chris Wondolowski against the Netherlands in 2014 miss sitters like that. So I've seen Liverpool players miss sitters like that. So Darwin Nunez. So anyways, it was a goal. Wag stayed down. They looked at VAR looked at it. Our good friend, refereeing the game, did not have to go to the monitor, and it was, goal stood, 2-0 Minnesota United. As I said, it was a really great piece of teamwork, great passes, a really good dummy by Pukki, some really bad, some miscommunication with Sporting Kansas City. And that is what gives us the Peter Vermes of it all. Or as I'm calling it, the Peter Vermes. If you haven't been on Twitter today or yesterday or today, they are wonderful. So let's talk about the goal first, and then we can talk a little bit about the memes and the Peter Vermes of it all. MJ, what were your thoughts on that goal?
Again, those of you who are new to this pod, I like to go back to where things got started. And this ball was progressed through the midfield. And then on the left side, just a lot of overloading or creating two-on-ones and passing lanes. And so there's just a great set of passes. Robin Lude was involved. Will Trapp was involved. Tragapane might have been involved. Rosales was definitely involved. And so you have a series of passes that are one, two touch. People are not taking a lot of time, and that's hard for a defense to reposition if you're making passes that quickly. So really good field vision by the Minnesota United players to find those pockets and lanes to get into more and more slightly dangerous areas and progress the ball up the field. To me, that was the really impressive part. Yes, the assist and the goal are important because without those, we don't win. But the really impressive part for me was all the passing that led up to that, to set that up, to draw everyone's attention to our left side, supporting Kansas City's right side of the pitch, and then to have Tani make that back post run.
Absolutely. That's what strikers are supposed to do. They're supposed to make those runs to the back post, you know? So, just,
I said, you always got to watch the back post.
Yeah. You know, back post and back door are very important things you need to keep an eye on. So at all times. Yeah. So
I think this would be a good game for Tim Melia, who has probably had to dole out, you know, paying some of his back line for covering the back post a bunch. He should bring his receipts and have his back line buy him some beer after this, because those two goals were his fault.
Yeah, absolutely. So, and you could tell he was pissed too. I was right in front of the Wonderwall, and we were letting him have it on Saturday night. So, so mention Peter
Vermees. Not a happy camper. And what do you bring when you go camping? Sporks. So
yeah. So Peter Vermees held up a iPad in his press conference of showing what he, you know, what he assumed was the incorrect, VAR lack of intervention. He thought it was offside. I watched there's two things here. So for those of you who looked at that and were like, how is he not offside? The rule, so everybody's looking at the last defender for Kansas City. The problem is that you're not supposed to be looking at the last defender because the ball is in front of the last defender. So the second to last defender, you know, is not where the line is drawn. The line is drawn where the ball is. And so there was, I can't remember what the name of, MJ, maybe you remember the name of the Twitter handle.
Docker photogrammetry.
Yes. So there's, if you read any articles on it, either The Athletic or I think MLS's website or whatever, they link to this, this guy. He drew the lines and basically saying where the ball is, where Tani is basically about 1 inch onside. Like it is minuscule. Like it is tiny, tiny, tiny. But if compared to the defender, yes, he is offside compared to the defender, but where the ball is in front of that defender, towards the goal. So everybody was like complaining about being offside. Like we're looking at the defender, not looking at the ball. So it's a correct decision. The fact that they didn't go look at it means there was no clear and obvious error. I think honestly, that's one of those ones that if the flag goes up and they call it offside, I don't think they probably don't overturn that one. They give them the goal, right? Probably. I think if, you know, that's one of those ones that it's, either way, it's like if they, whatever the call in the field is, they're probably not going to change that. So it was, make of that what you will. But technically, the call was correct, right? And I'm sure so anyways, that's the general story here. Peter Vermees holds up this iPad. It shows the screenshot or the where it stopped, or basically. And I'm sure he had one of his assistant coaches like go in and meticulously find that one specific point where it looks good on his case, and holds it up and complains to the Kansas City media and all that. Well, of course, it's Peter Vermees. So that is going to get, as I'm calling it, Peter Vermeemed, where he takes a picture. And so there's, you see, if you go on Twitter, there's a ton of people had some fun with that. Some of the best ones are, there's a one with, I think it was Iowa Loons, who's been fantastic Twitter follow, who basically put in, he's showing up, Peter Vermees showing a picture of his favorite Wolves player, and it's a picture of Naz Reid. It's just, so there's a bunch of ones. Sporting Kansas City fans did some of their own sort of inside jokey ones. The realtors, MLS crew, got in on the fun as well. So you can go look the Peter Vermees memes. The guy has had a few of these in his illustrious career as a head coach. He's a very colorful, fiery guy. He's an MLS legend, both as a player and also as a manager. When the dude retires, he will be a first, you know, he'll be first ballot Hall of Fame type dude. I hate him because, you know, he has my team's number, you know, pretty much consistently, but you got to respect the guy and the stuff that he's built in Kansas City. So But yes, the Kansas City tears. Give me all of them, all of the Kansas City tears. So, MJ, did you have any other thoughts on the Peter Vermeem? Well,
my favorite meme, and there were a lot of good ones, and some other Kansas City ones that I didn't understand. But my favorite was like, well, it was so nice for Peter Vermees to show that the KC Current are at the top of the NWSL standings, or table or whatever. And they, so they had photoshopped the NWSL standings onto the tablet, and it showed, you know, the Kansas City women's team up top. That KC Current team's playing a lot better than the Sporting Kansas City men's team right now.
Yeah, it was quite good. So definitely check them out if you like MLS, and obviously if you're listening to this podcast, I'm assuming you do. So cool. All right. So after that, we'll talk about this in a little bit, but Minnesota clearly, after that goal, really kind of sank back into positioned themselves back in sort of a defensively, not parking the bus per se, but I think just were a little less aggressive than they, you know, ended up they wanted to be. Alan Pulido and his shitty ass bowl cut pulled one back in the 38th minute. A really great ball. Kansas City went over the top of Minnesota's back line, and Daniel Shalloway ran onto it with a great pass to Pulido, who rifled it past. So his tree was trailing. Minnesota defenders did not kind of recognize him or will trap. Didn't drop back. I didn't see too much on that, so I can't really say who was specifically at fault, but Pulido had plenty of space at the top of the box and rifled one to the right of Dane St. Clair to give Kansas City some life before the end of the half. So, MJ, what were your thoughts on – did you have any thoughts on that goal?
Well, this goal, to me, looked like it was foreshadowed the three or four times previous that Sporting Kansas City were attacking. They were finding ways to get behind our back five, and most of those were over the top. One of them was, trying to bend the ball around. There was Tim Leibold, I believe is his name, but the German fullback, he bent a ball that went around Arriaga and Michael Boxall to hit Willie Agata. So, like, they were trying to either bend balls, curve balls, or go over the top to get behind the Minnesota back line. And they were getting good chances. You know, shots were going higher, wide, or getting blocked. But it looked like it's just inevitable that one of those talented Sporting Kansas City attacking players, and they have many, is just going to get on the end of this. And you know, credit to Shalloway with the one-touch outsole and Pulido for, you know, after two touches getting the shot off. It would be interesting. It looked like the shot deflected wider than initially was going to off of a Minnesota defender. I wish I could go back and just, you know, remove the clutter and see if Dane St. Clair was positioned, you know, to be in the path of that ball, or if he could have stopped it had it not taken that deflection. But regardless, they scored, and it was close enough to the end of the half where I felt like, oh, Heath Trends, you know, like turning the brain off at the end of the half, like not playing to the end of the whistle, like, uh-oh, like, halftime adjustments are going to be made. Peter Vermees usually makes good halftime adjustments. This is going to be trouble.
Yeah. So let's talk about that quick, though, because this is actually a good transition. Minnesota holds on. It's 2-1 at the half. Did you guys know that you can make changes at halftime?
No.
Did you know what? You can change You can change your shape and your formation at halftime, too?
Wait. Strategy? Are you saying that, like, when you have the whole team together in one locker room, like, and play isn't going on, that's a good time to introduce new ideas?
Yeah. I had no idea. Weirdly, it's, you know, it seems in hindsight, it seems like a fucking no brainer, but what do we know? We're just lowly podcasters. So, Ramsey makes two changes at half. He takes Pookie off, and he takes Franco Francopane off, brings in Caden Clark and Bongi. One thing I and I'll say I listened to his entire press conference from last night, yesterday. I don't think I've listened to a press conference from I barely listen to fucking Jurgen Klopp's press conferences, let alone Adrian Heath's press conferences, right? So so hearing him talk about how and why he made the changes, I think, MJ, I think you wrote this in your column as well today, basically saying he wants the team to not think there's 11, 12, 13 main guys, right? And then there's the other people, the guys who don't play. He wants everybody to be bought into number one, the team, but the way they're playing and changing up the formation, which he did, he also did against Charlotte too, right? He kind of thoroughly changed the formation as well, at halftime. That lets the players know that they may not start the game, but they know that there's a possibility that things are going to change how Minnesota wants to play, and their skill set will be required. And so that they are locked in, that they're ready to go. Dane Clark, I think has not had the best year. I think this was the best game he's had this season with Minnesota United.
Agreed.
Bongi, I don't think had a super great game. He was slipping all over the place, but what those two guys brought in is he was able to switch back to that sort of that 5-4-1, provide width on the side, which is where Sporting was attacking Minnesota in the first half. And that was something that he recognized, like that Ramsey mentioned, I think, in the press conference, that after about 20 minutes or so, he saw that's what Sporting was trying to do, right? So he recognized, him and his team, the assistant coaches, saw what was happening, saw their original plan had flaws that Sporting had recognized and adapted to. And so then at halftime, they adapted to the adaptation, and it worked. Like they did. So, long story short, Minnesota, their game ends 2-1. Carlos Harvey gets a 10-minute cameo, which was great for him. I thought he looked really good in those 10 minutes, as good as you can look in 10 minutes. And Minnesota didn't have, Ramsey alluded to this as well in the press conference and in the articles we've seen written about the game. Like, of the games of the last three games, even though they lost one, drew one, at home, that he was a little more upset with how this game performed. He was great with the result, right? But he also, I can't remember what the exact quote was, MJ, maybe you have it or something, is like, I can't justify my saying, okay, we did a good job, even though we lost, or even though we ended up with a draw, and not say the exact same, I didn't like how some of this stuff happened. I'm glad we got the result, right? 3 points is 3 points, but I'd be a hypocrite if I didn't identify the things that I saw in this game as well, which I think is, again, another fucking breath of fresh air, right? It's not the same old pitter patter, and someone who has a consistent way they want to play, and he'll call it out when he doesn't see it. He'll call it out when he sees it, even though the result might not go his way. Sorry, MJ, go ahead.
Well, first I want to piggyback on something you said earlier, where it's not like you have a main 11 and these are the auxiliary guys, but I mean, I'm not going to get the quote exactly right, but Ramsey basically said that the changes made at halftime had nothing negative to do with Fragapane and Puki. It's not like you were playing bad, so we're taking you out. It was a very tactical and skill set, this, we need to change this, so we're doing this, and it has nothing negative to say like you guys were playing like shit. That's and in fact, it's more saying that Ramsey's like, I got the tactics wrong. I need to make the tactics right. So here's what we're doing differently.
Or not that they got him wrong, but the tactics he had were figured out, and so now he's adapting and changing.
Right. So, but yeah, I guess my point is Ramsey likes to take ownership of things and not throw players under the bus. The other thing that I would say is that, To your point, I don't have the exact quote again, but that you can make these changes and even make changes mid game, or mid half, and to see how Ramsey does that, it's really incredible. He sees things, he and his coaches confer about things, and they make adjustments.
Yeah. Jess, anything you want to add to any of that stuff or any about the game generally? I mean, that's you know, pretty much that's the end of the game. I mean, obviously Minnesota, there's a few chances, but nothing really too terribly vital or too terribly valuable for either Kansas City or for Minnesota. So Jess, is there anything you want to add?
I will say Padelford, I'm getting used to him starting. He didn't, you know, rub me as wrong. I thought he did a pretty good job. And Clark, like you said, I think that was the best he's done for us since forever. So,
yeah.
Any comments on Padelford's facial hair?
I didn't look that closely.
Okay. David, getting back to your original question that I completely spaced out about, like, this is a huge tension between the East and the West in the way that we look at things. In the West, we often look at the result, and the result is the most important. Ramsey, in his postgame interview, like, expressed the tension between how we play or methods, like how it's done versus the what happened, you know. Mm-hmm. And he was, you know, like, when I say, hey, we lost, but I liked how we played. We looked like the better team at these moments in most of the half. We were doing what I wanted us to do. But the results didn't factor in. Like, he felt that this game was the opposite of that, mm-hmm. that they weren't on the front foot. They were kind of, again, not parking the bus, but like sinking back and trying to prevent goals, trying to give Dane St. Clair that clean sheet, is another way that Boxall described it. Was just like, you get two goals up and you're almost focused more on helping your goalkeeper get that clean sheet than you are doing other things like maintaining possession or trying to score again or doing the successful things that got you those two goals to give you a even safer lead. So yeah. Despite them not having a lot of possession, they still win.
Yeah. last thing I'll kind of say about this is that, and about the game, is that before the Polito goal, there's a couple of opportunities, chances for Kansas City, a couple of bigger chances. Then there's a Polito goal. after that, for most of the second half, Dane wasn't really challenged at all. There was one kind of good header that was basically straight at him. He didn't have to move. Other than that, I think he only ended up having to make the like one save in the game or two saves or something. He didn't have a ton to do against Charlotte. Even in those games, even the games that we lost, like, he didn't, you know, those were, you know, either complete breakdowns or good goals. Our defense has done a pretty good job of funneling things in so that they're either, you know, easy shots for Dane to take care of or pressuring and causing, you know, players to shoot into the brew hall, like Willie Agata did early in the first half of the game there. So, I think it's a testament to the defense, the defensive first philosophy that Ramsey really talked about when he, you know, first joined the team, that he was going to focus on building out from the back and building out from a solid defensive core, giving the team an opportunity to sneak one and then sort of build his tactics and his formations as a foul. And I think we've seen that in actual practice as well, not just, you know, not just something spouting at us at press conferences and media avails and stuff. We're seeing the transition and the evolution of that philosophy. So.
Yeah. And to your point about the defense playing well, I believe that the shots on target, Minnesota had five, Sporting Kansas City only had two.
Mm-hmm.
One of those is the goal. One of those is the goal. The other one is probably that header. Those were their two shots on target, which means not just Dane St. Clair positioning well, but the 10 people in front of them really limited what Sporting Kansas City had for opportunities. And Boxall talked about that. Go read my article.
Yep. All right. So the Loons weren't the only team playing a Sporting Kansas City team this weekend. The Toons were down in Kansas playing the Sporks 2. That one did not go as well for our beloved Toons. They lost that one 4-1, which means they finally get to come home and play their home opener this coming Friday, May 3rd, at the Nessie versus St. Louis City 2. I know they also put out the team announced that they're going to be doing a sort of season ticket holder event for the match coming up on May 12th, which is Mother's Day. I will be taking my children out there to get them away from their mother for Mother's Day, as is her request. So if you want to come hang out, meet my amazing kids, Sunday, May 12th, I think they're playing LA Galaxy 2 in that game, I believe. I can't remember exactly. And if you are a season ticket holder, you should have got an email a couple of weeks ago that gets you a free ticket to the game. You can pay, and the two's games are I think they're like $10 a pop. It's super cheap. It's out at Blaine, so you get that old school Blaine feeling. It's really cool. Been out there a couple times. I would love to get up there more, but God, it's, you know, when Allianz is 20 minutes away on foot and Blaine is all the way on fucking Blaine, it's hard to do that. So
Blaine's still Blaine.
They changed their name to Ventura County FC, but yes,
LA. Okay. Cool.
Artist formerly known as
Okay, very cool. All right. So as we kind of alluded to, Song Bin-jeon was back in Minnesota. I don't even believe he made the 18, or did he make the 18, MJ? Was he on? Okay, that's
20.
What I thought.
He's 20 now, but yeah, with
yeah,
the
new or, yeah, whatever.
The game day 20, but he did not make the game day 20. So
I'm assuming he got back on like probably Friday, because they played Qatar on Thursday, or not Qatar. They played in Qatar against Indonesia in the quarterfinals of the Asian the U23 AFC Asian Championship Cup. Asian Cup. Yeah.
One of the things that I did not know, and I'm kind of embarrassed for not knowing, but that athletes can, from South Korea, can
Medical exemption materially deferment, yeah.
From required military service if they win a gold medal. Now, since South Korea isn't winning a World Cup anytime soon, you know, the chances for Song Bin to be exempt from his military service would be things like the Asian Games, you know,
or the Olympics,
or the Olympics. By them getting eliminated in the semifinals or quarterfinals, not even the semis, but being eliminated by Indonesia in something like 13 or not that was it 8 rounds?
No, it was like it was. 12, it was 12 or 13.
Yeah, they had to go back around, right? They had to go start over again. So anyway, by I don't know how many rounds of penalty kicks. And so because of this, you know, one opportunity for Sang-bin to get exemption from his military service is now gone, because South Korea cannot qualify for Olympics in Paris this year.
Yeah. As we mentioned last week, they needed to win this game and then they would be either in or in a playoff spot. Against a CAF team, but they did not do that. So he came back a little early. Sounds like he'll be available for the game upcoming on Saturday in Atlanta in Megatron's Butthole, Saturday, May 4th at 6:30 local time. So yeah, come to the Black Art and watch that. So because of that, he's back. We talked about Joseph Rosales. He had a hand in both the goals. He got the secondary assist in both goals. Or the primary assist in Tani's goal and the secondary assist on the Boxall goal. He was named to the MLS Team of the Match Day. So super cool for him as well. So,
hey.
Yeah. So, yeah, as I mentioned, Atlanta, 6:30 on Saturday. I'll be at the Black Heart. Come say hey. MJ, do you have anything on this?
Well, as you may or may not know, former Vikings quarterback Kirk Cousins is now a member of the Atlanta Falcons. And he showed up as a guest to hammer in the spike at the Atlanta Falcons game. And there is a promo, Atlanta United promo photo of him doing his Kirko Chains bit, which Vikings fans are very upset that he's taking the Kirko Chains bit to Atlanta. That should be our bit, they say. I don't really care about the Kirko Chains bit, but Vikings fans are not happy that he's taking that bit down to Atlanta with him. I don't know if you can own a silly alter ego character, but the Vikings fan thinks it belonged to them. But anyway, he showed up to the Atlanta game. He also showed up to a Braves game. And newsflash, Atlanta United lost that game, and the Atlanta Braves lost the game that Kirk Cousins showed up to. So no surprises there, maybe.
Can we get him to come to the game against the Loons on Saturday? all right. In our, I guess, recurring bit, Ray No Show, he was supposed to get on a flight this weekend. He obviously missed it. He is not back in Minnesota yet. So that is your Ray No Show update for the week. He did not show up. MJ, let's kind of wrap it up here. Let's start with Minneapolis City, though. They have some matches coming up here.
Well, they have one match. The USL League Two season does not start for a while, but the Minnesota Super Cup starts very soon. It's the second weekend in May. So May 11th, Saturday, May 11th, 6 p.m., Edor Nelson Field, Minneapolis City will host Rochester FC. The next Super Cup games aren't until June 4th. So, so I think that's exciting. Your season ticket member pack for Minneapolis City probably doesn't have this game on the schedule. So just a reminder, you know, come to the Minnesota Super Cup Saturday, May 11th. Be there.
Yep. Sounds good. Cool. All right. And then let's finish up with Champions League, Women's Champions League in UEFA.
Yeah. I always love this tournament. It's really exciting to see women play at this level, both technically and tactically, what they can do individually with the ball, and just the team tactics that are on display is so high level. This past Saturday, in a second leg of the semifinal, Barcelona defeated Chelsea 2-0. Chelsea got a red card. Even though Chelsea scored one back at Barcelona, that means they lose on aggregate 2-1. And then on Sunday, the other semifinal second leg, Olympique Lyonnais beat Paris Saint-Germain 2-1, and that means on aggregate they win 5-3. Boy, lots of goals. Once again, and I say once again because this is the third time the final for this tournament will be Lyon versus Barcelona. So it happened, I want to say, in 21-22 and one other time. So even though Barcelona has won two of the last three of these tournaments, those two wins have been against Wolfsburg and was it Paris Saint-Germain? No, Chelsea, I believe. So the Barcelona's has won this tournament twice, but not against the most impressive team in this tournament, which is Olympique Lyonnais. So it should be good. It is on Saturday, May 25th at 11 a.m. in San Mamés, Bilbao, Spain. It will be interesting to see if the locals in Bilbao will be cheering for a Barcelona team.
That should be fun.
There'll be plenty of Spanish neutrals or Barcelona fans that will travel, that will be a very dominant Barcelona home crowd. But I will be interested if the citizens if you're an Athletic Bilbao supporter, if you're just kind of frustrated, like, why is this Barcelona team coming and playing in our backyard? Why does this have to be here this year? That'll be interesting.
Yeah. The other sort of side note for this is that Emma Hayes, new U.S. Women's National Team coach, is the Chelsea manager currently. She has never won this tournament. I think it's like the one trophy that Emma Hayes has not won in her time at Chelsea, Chelsea being a very, probably the most dominant women's team in the Women's Super League over the course of the last decade or so. So she will be coming a little earlier, I think, than to the U.S. Because there was worried. I think this was the plan was for her to stick around through, you know, through the end of the Chelsea season. So she doesn't worry about going waiting for the final to stick around. So we should see Emma Hayes a few weeks later after the final at Allianz Field for the match against Korea. So it'll be fun. Cool. All right, guys. What do you got? MJ, where can people find you? Read your stuff.
I am at MJ Matsui, MJ MATTSUI on Twitter. I'm also MJ _MPLS and on Blue Sky. You can find my work at NorthlandSoccer.com, NorthlandSoccer.com.
Right on. Jess, how about you?
You can find me on the Twits or the X Twits, Twits and Twats, at Jessica14408392. And you can also see me on stage Thursday, June 13th for a Thorns and Roses showcase. And then there's another show in May as well. So
excellent. Cool.
Just dancing my little heart out.
Follow. I'm sure Jess will post on her twits and twats that where it's these intense. Things are. Where these things are, where you can buy tickets and stuff like that. So yeah, definitely check that out. You can always find me at Texas Zeller on all the things, or my Substack, the Daves I Know .substack.com. Since we last recorded a podcast, I saw three movies, including they re-released Alien in the theaters for like a week. So it's actually out. It's in theaters right now at AMC theaters. So I went and saw that last night.
That's awesome.
For the first time in an actual theater. I've obviously seen Alien before. So it's been good. So, all right, let's end it here. Thanks everybody for listening. We've been the Daves You Know. This is the Daves I Know.
We have got to try and work it out, because we both know we can't do nothing at all. We do our thing, son.
Long as you do yours, land here become fecund. Yeah,
we do our thing, son.
Through the act, we attract two, hope to reach one.
We do our thing.
Do it.
We do our thing, son.
Some will paint a piece, some will spray with a machine gun. It's mad work to be done.
We do our thing, son.
I ain't nothing at all.